Coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas, and recorded live, Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And once again, it's a good to have you back with us as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. And today, we're going to talk to Dewey Bartlett. Dewey Bartlett is the mayor of the city of Tulsa, Oklahoma. And we ran across the mayor when we were doing news coverage on the IEEE Energy Conference going on in Tulsa the 19th and 20th of April. And Mayor Bartlett has a program going on that he and his staff are calling the Second Century Energy Initiative. And this is some really fascinating stuff. Where do you hear what Tulsa has planned to make alternative energy easier for the people that live in the city? It's really pretty terrific. And, of course, we're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of. Actually, in today's Den of Strangers, we're going to hear the actual voice of William Jennings Bryan from his Cross of Gold speech that he delivered in 1896. He recorded it later on in the studio, and we have the actual recording of William Jennings Bryan. So that's kind of fun. Visit our fountain of useless information we have here on the set in the second half of the program. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. If you want to know more about that energy conference going on in Tulsa, the 19th and 20th of April, is really easy to find out. Go to our webpage, promiseoftomorrow.biz, and there on the right-hand side of the screen, you'll see a link. Click on the IEEE, and it'll give you a link. It'll take you right to the website that tells all about that particular conference. And don't forget, those of you who are listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online at that website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. Before we get to our conversation with Mayor Bartlett, let's step over here and walk into our world newsroom. A little noisy in here, but we'll get over it. Our world newsroom, and see what we've got. There's an interesting story that I want to tell you about. A new study led by Oregon State University geologists has found that the salty soils in a region of Antarctica, the what they call the frigid McMurdo Dry Valleys, are frequently dotted with moist patches in the spring despite a lack of snowmelt and no possibility of rainfall. Says it takes a combination of light, of the right kinds of salts, and sufficient humidity to make the process work. But those ingredients are present on Mars, and in fact, in many desert areas on Earth, he pointed out. So that's pretty interesting. He says the soils in the area have a fair amount of salt from sea spray and from ancient fjords that flooded the region. Let's see what his name is here. Let's get this correct. He's Joseph Levy, a postdoctoral researcher at OSU's College of Earth, Ocean, and Atmospheric Sciences. The study was supported by the National Science Foundation. It's been published online in the Journal of Geophysical Research Letters. All right. Get out of the newsroom, and let's meet today's guests. Well, at this time, I want to introduce you to Dewey Bartlett, Jr. He's in his third year as mayor of the city of Tulsa, Oklahoma. And if the name rings a bell, it's because he's the son of former Oklahoma governor and U.S. Senator Dewey F. Bartlett, Sr. Welcome to the program, Mr. Mayor.
Well, thank you, sir.
So good to have you. Now, we're going to want to get into what you're doing with the Second Century Energy Initiative. But before we do, you spent years as head of a very successful energy company. Now, what made you want to get out of private industry and be the mayor of a major city like Tulsa?
Well, I've always thought that it was almost a requirement, but certainly a good opportunity for people that are in the private sector, in the business community, for them to get involved with public service, especially in elected office. People that are in the business community that have been involved in the business community for a long time, they have a certain perspective that, in my view, is sometimes missing in elected office. And it's good, I believe, for business people to get a good taste for what it's like to be involved in public office, because it's totally different in so many ways than it is running one's own company or being involved with a fairly large company.
But do you think you might want to go on to the State House, or maybe even do what your father did, go to the U.S. Senate or something like that?
Oh, it'd be a real honor, but I really don't know. It's a lot of work, and I really enjoy being mayor very much, and I do plan on running for re-election. I'm in a 4-year term, and we'll hopefully be able to run again, and we'll see how it goes. You never know what the future is about. I have a good friend that said that political office is like malaria. You just never know when suddenly it'll just come out and grab hold of you and decide and something else will happen. So, but I think right now I'm just planning on being mayor and enjoying that very much, because we are having some good success in a lot of things.
Well, we get our presidents from the governors, and so maybe that's an area that you'll go someday, and someday we'll see you in Washington. That could be fun.
It would be. It'd be very interesting. I'd enjoy it very much.
It was fun for me because I knew Gerald Ford back when he was a congressman up in Detroit. I was a reporter in Detroit, and he used to come through all the time, and I knew Jerry real well. And when he was chosen by Richard Nixon to be the vice president, I thought, well, Nixon needs somebody that's as pure as the driven snow, and he got it in Jerry Ford. And so that was real fun for me.
Boy, he was a nice man. I mean, just a good, solid man, and I don't think he could have made a better choice. Gerald Ford was just one you could always trust. He felt very comfortable with him. He had good judgment and always had the best interests of the company at heart. Never had to worry about that. He was a good man, good president.
Well, after Spiro Agnew, Nixon had to pick somebody that was absolutely could get approved without a question. And, of course, Gerald Ford, as far as his integrity went, was absolutely beyond reproach.
That's exactly. I couldn't agree with you more. That's a great observation.
Well, let's get into the things that you're doing there, because we're quite interested in the energy aspect of it, since I'm covering events that are going on with the IEEE Energy Conference being held in Tulsa the 19th and 20th of April. Tulsa has one of the most exceptional university systems, 4 engineering universities, OU, OSU, Tulsa, and Oral Roberts, and then the liberal arts at Langston. And educational opportunities abound in undergraduate, master, and PhD degrees. And you've got a 10-point plan that you've got up at your website. And I noticed number 9, if I could read it here, says, build upon Tulsa's oil and gas legacy by using our colleges and universities and existing knowledge and resources in the industry to develop an energy business plan for the future that will focus on our existing oil and gas industries and expand on alternative energy opportunities, including geothermal, wind, solar, and compressed natural gas. Now, is this the basis for your Second Century Energy Initiative?
Yes, it really is. A very significant portion of it is. We named it Second Century because Tulsa, as many cities and states in our country, we have a very significant history in the energy industry, primarily oil and natural gas. We've gone through one century now of being involved in a very, very productive way, in a very large way, in the oil and natural gas industry, in the exploration and production of energy, the refining of oil, and the processing of natural gas, all these things. But now we're now entering our second century of energy requirement. Because, as we all know, without access to reasonably priced and consistently available energy, our economic system just will not work. It requires energy of some type. And now we are in our second century of energy requirements, and it's a time when we really are beginning to understand the need to segue from the traditional fossil fuels energy into the alternatives, whatever they might be, whether it's wind or solar, geothermal, or a different type of fossil fuel, such as compressed natural gas, for example, that in order to prepare ourselves and our economy and our the well-being of our country for the future, for the next century to come, we have to be in a position to provide the need for energy, but also provide the need for the alternatives, and that normally requires a very well-educated student as well as access to a lot of research. And I believe that in Tulsa we have a lot of that available that really positions us in a very unique way to provide opportunities to create these energy opportunities, whether they are traditional oil or natural gas, or if they're they could be in the alternatives. We have the ability in our universities to provide very high-level engineering, geophysics, physicists, geology, general energy management, at the University of Tulsa in particular, their courses are created in such a way that they're not necessarily focused on traditional oil and natural gas, but they are focused on the alternatives as well. And if they can provide an educated student done at a very high quality level, then that student either will be able to provide part-time work for a company as this student is progressing through the college ranks, or once he graduates, he or she can be hired as a full-time employee, very highly educated, with experience, not just focused on oil and gas, but has had a lot of experience looking at the alternatives. We have in Tulsa a very high degree of capability of looking at compressed natural gas, of segueing our vehicles into the use of compressed natural gas for a primary fuel as opposed to gasoline and diesel fuel. And just that fact alone gives us a real opportunity, I believe. We have companies in Tulsa that are involved with, besides the conversion of existing gasoline and diesel engines to compressed natural gas, we also are providing the fueling stations that are necessary to provide the natural gas in a compressed way into an automobile or a truck, whatever that might be, using a fueling station. And it's that type of activity that is going to provide the convenience but also the cost savings for our future, well, current and future use of a variety of vehicles. So I really see all of our capabilities in Tulsa, everything from education to our history to our current focus on traditional fuels and traditional oil and natural gas exploration and production, but also the alternatives. You know, some people, on my building, for example, where I have my company, I have 20 solar panels that I had installed about 4 or 5 years ago.
Really?
And people wonder, well, why do you do something like that? You're in the oil and gas business. And I always reply, I say, well, who better to understand the concept of energy, how precious a commodity it is, than somebody that's in the oil and gas industry. So I have 20 solar panels that produce anywhere from 15 to 30% of our energy needs every day. And I have a little better feel for it. So I think that the people that are in this industry have such great vision and capability of being able to segue from one energy form to another, and that in itself provides a great opportunity for Tulsa, but especially for companies that do grow and prosper here and take advantage of our capabilities.
Well, it's wonderful that you mentioned solar, and I was going to ask you about that, because I'm told by the scientists that come on this program from time to time that solar is the only energy source that is exponential. Compared to Moore's Law, that that it's going to just get better and better and better all the time, and at some time all of our energy will be derived from solar. Of course, I can imagine Tulsa being in a very envious position there compared to many other places in the country, because the sun shines a lot in your city. So are you with this second century energy initiative that you've got going, all these things that you're talking about and the neat things that you're doing, what about the implementing this? I mean, what are the incentives to get people to adopt these alternative energy things? Do you have things going on to encourage people to install solar panels on their homes or their businesses or something? And natural gas, you mentioned, yes. I understand fleet people are switching over to natural gas and saving themselves a ton of money over using a conventional diesel or gasoline.
The cost savings in compressed natural gas is pretty incredible. We've been in the process of trying to lead by example at the city of Tulsa, and we're converting large numbers of our fleet, especially our large vehicles. All of our buses we're converting over to compressed natural gas, and we're doing the same thing with the our pickup of locally provided trash. We have 65 garbage trucks that we're making a requirement that they be CNG powered. The cost savings is anywhere from $1 to $1.50 per gallon equivalent. And in a vehicle that uses 4 to 6 gallons a mile, miles per gallon. But it's pretty significant in the savings, and the payback on it is well within 2 years. Now, as far as solar goes, it's getting better. It's getting less expensive, but it's still, compared to what's presently available through our public utilities, it's still more expensive. And even with the tax benefits that are provided either by the federal government or by the state, we do have some small state incentives in Oklahoma, it's still pretty expensive. And in states like Oklahoma and Texas, Louisiana, where the utility costs are low because we do have direct access to natural gas, and it's much cheaper to purchase locally, then that makes the utility charges generally much cheaper than other parts of the country, like in California or many states in the Northeast and Northwest, where electricity is much, much more expensive.
Sure.
Then solar-generated electricity is it's not quite on par yet with traditional utility charges, but it's getting closer. So it's just it's a matter of time as more and more people do it. Make the decision to transition a little bit into solar and what other alternatives might be. Well, then they will become more cheaper, and at some point they will become on par with traditional utility charges, and then we'll see a very significant transition. But then the question becomes, what do we do at night? What do we do when the sun goes down? Well, we will have to continue to rely upon traditional generation of electricity, or we will have to come up with some method of storing electricity to be used at night, or possibly supplemented with wind-generated electricity, which is probably not always reliable by any stretch of imagination. So I think there's always going to be a need for traditional uses of crude oil and natural gas, because the weather-related or sun and darkness, all these things have an effect upon the ability to generate power. And if it's suddenly turns to be 8, 9 o'clock at night and the sun goes down, well, what do we do? We can't just hook up a light bulb to a small battery. We have to have the convenience of being able to switch on the switch and electricity comes on. We're used to that. That's what we've been raised with. So we have to have the convenience factor in there, and obviously it has to be at a price we can afford and is acceptable and is still very usable in all sorts of the commercial applications where electricity is necessary.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, and of course, we've had that dilemma for a long time because the battery development over the past 100 years has been at a snail's pace. But I understand from some of my sources who are not ready to quite talk about it yet that we're on the verge of some exponential and dramatic increases in battery storage and output that's coming along. But I don't have that information yet, and I know that you don't either. But I'd like you to put on your energy hat then for just a minute and we'll get back to natural gas. And how do you... how do you answer the fears that that our listeners have about the fracking problem? I mean, they really believe there is a definite scare about fracking causing earthquakes and contaminating groundwater and that sort of thing. How do you answer that?
Well, I really never have seen the evidence of that. I mean, there's a lot of conjecture, and it's very unfortunate. I think I always say, you know, consider the source of the complaint or the charge. I think when people really do get the emotion out of the situation and look at it from a very factual standpoint, they will see that many of these charges simply have no factual basis. There's been fracking going on in Oklahoma since the 1940s, and there have been literally thousands and thousands of wells that have been fracked, and there's been no evidence that I've ever heard of groundwater being polluted because of a frack of a well. Most of the groundwater, of course, is found in fairly shallow formations, less than a few hundred feet, less than 500 feet. And as water gets deeper, it becomes more salty and a lot of mineralization. But the wells that are fracked are normally 5,000, 10,000 feet down. And there's so many, I mean, there's literally this very hard, impervious layers of rock between all that activity and groundwater. So I just don't see that as a real factual problem. Now, I understand the fears that people have. In Oklahoma, we have a state agency called the Oklahoma Corporation Commission, similar to the Texas Railroad Commission, that oversees and regulates the proper practices of the industry. And they require that every well that's drilled has to have a good, strong iron pipe casing that goes from top to bottom, and that it be set in place with a very significant amount of cement. And so it's another impervious barrier between the ground, essentially, and whatever's coming up the pipe.
Well, Mr. Mayor, I think a lot of people will be really surprised to know how long fracking has really been going on, and we're going to want to know a whole lot more about that. But right now, we got a break for the half hour. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. In the Den of Strangers, will we meet today? Why, look at this. It's William Jennings Bryan from 1896. Ooh.
I come to speak to you in defense of a cause as holy as the cause of liberty, the cause of humanity. Mr. Carlyle said in 1878 that this was a struggle between the idle holders of idle capital and the struggling masses who produce the wealth and pay the taxes of the country. They tell us that the great cities are in favor of the gold standard. We reply that the great cities rest upon our broad and fertile prairies. Burn down your cities and leave our farms, and your cities will spring up again as if by magic. But destroy our farms, and the grass will grow in the streets of every city of the country. If they dare to come out in the open field and defend the gold standard as a good thing, we will fight them to the uttermost. Having behind us the producing masses of this nation and the world, supported by the commercial interests, the laboring interests, and the toilers everywhere, we will answer their demand for a gold standard by saying to them, You shall not press down upon the brow of labor this crown of thorns. You shall not crucify mankind upon a cross of gold.